good management is something that is very easy to explain, but it's very hard to do in practice. The main way to impact performance is at the environment level, not at the individual. The things that are really, that drive that kind of commitment and excitement of our project is like, is it an environment free of distractions? Is like making sure that the work you're doing is important, that people recognize, that has visibility. Working together on something, I think, is also super important. And that feeling of like teamwork and being able to work together on solving a problem.
If you're a tech leader looking to learn today's best practices for leading high-functioning teams, you're in the right spot. In each episode, we learn from today's top tech leaders as they share their successes, their failures, and their lessons learned along the way. I'm Debbie Madden, and this is the Scaling Tech Podcast, your blueprint for scaling tech teams. Let's dive in. Hey, everyone. I'm Debbie Madden, the host of the Scaling Tech Podcast. So excited to have you with us today. I'm really looking forward to this conversation. I'm talking with today Fabio Lessa about how to create a culture of performance in teams. So, hey, Fabio, it's good to see you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, excited to jump in. For those that don't know Fabio, he is leading the platform engineering team at Duolingo, and he spent the last 15 years building engineering organizations at startups and large consumer companies that we all know, like Spotify and SoundCloud. So let's jump right in. So we had talked before this podcast, and you had shared a story that I want you to kind of walk us through. So you said you had recently joined an emergency project, which again, right then I was like, tell me more. And it reminded you of a few important principles on creating a culture of performance in teams. So let's start by, if you can walk us through the project so we can understand the context.
Yeah. We had this project that was supposed to take 3 months. We were switching providers in one of our observability tools. But for reasons that I guess the details are not as important here, we had to make that switch much faster. We had to do it in basically 1 month. And we were like scrambling to figure out how to do that. And one thing that we had just recently introduced as like just a tool we use in the area now is this idea of tiger teams, which, you know, I've seen that other companies use. And the concept is basically getting a team of all the specialties you need to deliver on some piece of work, and you would free them from all their other responsibilities so they could primarily focus on tackling the problem. So yeah, so that's what we did. And we got a group together, pulled people from different teams, assigned them the task, and they just went and rolled it. And it was like really interesting to see, because they not only did it within a month, they did it in 2.5 weeks, work that was supposed to take 3 months. And what I thought was interesting, because, you know, I was following along, I was joining some lineups and watching them on Slack, and I would dare to say that I think they were actually even having fun doing it. It was just so much energy and everybody jumping in and delivering all the work. And so I think that was so when we completed the project, we had lots of discussions about like how people felt about the experience and what we could bring into like normal teamwork. And that's what triggered all those.
I want to ask you what lessons you took from that. But first, if you can tell me two things. How big was the team? And had that specific team been a team before?
No, they had not. So it was, I think, 7 people, I want to say. And it was a combination of like people from 4 different teams in platform. So we had some people from the observability team who were already going to work on this, but then we had people coming from like our infrastructure team, another that was more involved with like the services themselves. And so we pulled all the skill sets we needed to deliver on that project.
That's fascinating. So this is a team of people that didn't even get to go through like the storming,
learning,
performing phase, and they still exceeded even the new expectation. That's amazing to me. So, okay. So let's jump into the lessons you took. And walk us through there are probably several, but, and I might dive in with some curiosity questions, but yeah, wow. tell us what the top lessons you were, you learned from that.
I mean, obviously we were very happy with the results, but I think the two biggest things that, I thought was interesting was that if you look at the work itself, what they had to do, if say there was no emergency to have this work done. If I had walked around the company asking engineers, like, hey, I have this work here that you need to basically move us from this provider to another, it was all like, you know, having to learn about the APIs on both sides, more of like scripting. There was nothing like crazy complicated from a technical implementation, coordinating with a bunch of teams that were going to have to do that to make the switch. So I would say that most people would have thought that was like considered boring work, right? Which is interesting because it goes to show that what makes people work hard, what makes people get really excited about coming to work and collaborating with each other has nothing to do with the things that a lot of times people talk about, which is like working on an interesting, complicated project, doing AI work. Obviously, as engineers, people always, we love to learn new things. And that's one of the main drivers for people to even have gotten into this career. But I don't think that's enough. You know, I think the things that are really, that drive that kind of commitment and excitement about a project is like, is it an environment free of distractions? Is like making sure that the work you're doing is important, that people recognize, that has visibility. Working together on something, I think, is also super important. And that feeling of like teamwork and being able to work together on solving a problem, those are, to me, that was one of the lessons I took as one of the biggest things that project brought to them. And the other is also that I think it's more on the management philosophy side. The main way to impact performance is at the environment level, not at the individual, right? Like I think for this project, if you look at the individuals that worked on this, they were all like perfectly fine, good performers on their teams, and they, you know, ship good work. But on this team, they just ship so much more, right? Like, and so to even your point about they didn't even go through those normal state team goes through towards building that, and they still were able to accomplish so much more. And, you know, I think it's that management quote that a bad process will beat a good person every time. That, you know, a lot of times people assume the problem is with the individuals. When you're having a team performance issue, you go and, you know, if you think with that mindset, you go, you know, start micromanaging everything, asking a ton of questions of people, interrogating their work. Sometimes managers will try and even take control of the work, do the work themselves. And then you have people feeling like, you know, autonomy was taken from them. Decisions are top down, and it just kind of makes things even worse. So I think like performance issues do exist. Like people who have performance issues, bad hires obviously exist. That happens all the time. But most often I would argue that, you know, the better approach is to start looking like, is there anything about this environment that they're in, the way this team is set up, that is hindering the performance here, that this person might not be connecting well with? And, you know, trying to look, are the goals clear for the team? Do they have processes to deal with interruptions? So like in platform work, that's a very common thing, right? Like we serve internal customers, so you always have people asking questions and requests for changes on the tooling that we give them. And so if you don't have a good handle on how to get that, all those requests, then prioritize them, you can easily get drowned into just responding to that and firefighting all the time. Those themes at the end of the day matter, I think, a lot more on if you are able to create an environment where people can concentrate and focus and get work done. So
when you say it like that, my immediate question is, okay, so why isn't everyone doing this? Right. And I know there's a reason, and I have thoughts, but I would like to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, no, totally. It's a great question because, you know, that's one of the funny things about management. I would say like good management is something that is very easy to explain, but it's very hard to do in practice. Like it's just a simple example is like just having performance conversations. Everybody knows they need to get feedback, you know, when it happens and be direct and you know, not massage it too much, but everybody fails to do it because it's just uncomfortable to do. And but so in the specific case, I think the obviously the answer here will be team and company specific. So I think you have to look at the situation and see why the situation is the way it is. But from the teams that I've observed and things I've seen in places I've been in, I think like one aspect that creates strong incentives is like the performance review process that a lot of companies have. So we model ours after, I think, Google's. A lot of tech companies do a similar process where you assess someone's performance based on the impact, and calibration happens with a committee that might not necessarily know that the individuals, right, that are being discussed. The size of the organization. So the model itself, I don't want to go into all the details there. That's a whole podcast episode in itself. Talk about pros and cons of doing things that way. But I think it's important to acknowledge that it does create an incentive for individuals to work on highly visible things that can be credited individually to them, right? Like I've seen in cases where teams would have OKRs per individual. Like the number of OKRs the team had was equal to the number of people on the team. And, you know, people had arguments at the time to defend that. But like it does create an incentive where like it hurts teamwork, right? Like I'm not incentivized to go help you. If you have the most important OKR this team is working on this quarter, I will not be incentivized to go help you to finish that if we're coming close to the end of the quarter, if I'm not done with mine, because I think that will hurt me on my performance assessment because my OKR didn't get done, you know? So you almost end up with like a lot of mini teams without it inside the team rather than a team that works together on completing the important goals that they have. So I think that's one thing that creates bad incentives that, you know, we need to mitigate for. And one other that I've observed that I think goes into that category is I feel like it's more about generational thing in the industry, but like I feel like way more specialized today when it comes to like tech skills, right? Like I remember back in the day when everything was just web applications, everyone kind of worked on the entire stack. You know, people who did mostly backend knew enough web to do work on the front end too. And you know, when mobile came, now you know to work on a feature that in a product that has all the three big clients like iOS, Android, and web, you have to implement everything on all three plus the backend. So all these platforms have their own models of how things work and frameworks and patterns. So being good on all of them, it's almost like unreasonable.
It's hard, yeah.
That
yeah.
So. And so people fell into that model where like people say, I'm a backend engineer and I'm a right. iOS engineer and I'm an Android engineer. And that again, you know, it is what it is. There's good reasons for that to be that way, but it does hurt teamwork again.
Right.
You end up having to split the work by those technologies. And so, again, we can't help each other. So I'm backend, I finished my part. If you're the iOS person and you're still struggling, I guess I pick up work on some other story instead of coming helping
right.
you.
It's right, just so right. Because it doesn't make sense. Yet at the same time, it's very hard to undo that.
That's right.
Yeah, because the path through that requires a level of knowledge that is just not, you know, I mean, the learning curve is just when you multiply by all the individuals and all the bits that they have to learn. Now, I want to dive into like for people watching this, so like, okay, I want to create a culture of performance on a team or all my teams, right? Like, let's talk about some processes that we can implement to encourage this culture of performance to develop. The number one thing I've heard you say so far is to really focus on minimizing distractions. I think that's a key piece. That's very important. If the team knows that they are supported in saying no to things that come in from other stakeholders, I think that's obviously, you know, very powerful. Mm-hmm. But what else can folks do to encourage these performance-based outcomes? And it doesn't have to be on an emergency project, right? It could be, this could apply for all projects. So like, yeah, what else are the kind of one or two things that we can, others can try?
So I think that at the more organizational level, making sure that the teams have a clear scope, that they understand how that the scope that they own connects to that area's or company's overall direction, even in platform, which people usually complain that mapping is not one-to-one, there's still a lot of ways to do that. But so I would say that clarifying that, I see a lot of also teams that have way too much things on their plate and so many things on their plate. So is there a way to kind of break it up a little bit more, move responsibilities around to align it better? So that's kind of at the organizational level. And at the team level, and you know, the more I think about it, because since we ran this team, I've been thinking a lot about this. And I at the end of the day, I always go back to like the very basic things around what, you know, if you look at Agile, for example, and those kinds of processes, you know, if you strip it down to its essence, right? Like, because I never really cared if you're going to do, we used to fight always back in the day about like, you know, if hearts should be on a physical wall or if they should be on some like Jira or if we're going to do standups every day or not and what are we going to use for, how are we going to do run our retrospectives. But like, if you look at the end of the day, it's what those techniques all try to do is create a process of continuous improvement. Like, are we always like getting better? Are we reassessing what we're doing? And so it kind of ends up going back to those things, right? One of the things that we're doing, just to get more specific, we have a forum today in my area where we do a monthly get together and people demo their work, right? And we're changing that now to make it so that every team has to demo something, what they've been working on that, right? And again, I'm thinking back to those days, we used to do that at every sprint, right? Like you would work for 2 weeks and then you would invite all your stakeholders to watch what you produced, right?
Right.
And like that has not only the celebratory, but it creates also like a hack in your, it's a hack in the way that you can think of, like, if you know that you're going to have to demo in 2 weeks to a group of people who would not necessarily know what you're working on, like it has to be seen as like something of value to them that is perceived value to them. Then you focus on shipping something, you know what I mean, tangible that people will care about in that cycle. And you create that cycle of like, what are we going to deliver in 2 weeks? Let's try that. And again, if you don't deliver on that, right? Like then you have that disappointment of like, wow, that was embarrassing. We sat here, we didn't have much to show. So you're going to try harder next time and think like, how do we improve and make sure that doesn't happen again? So, you know, it starts to create that sense of like, what are we as a team producing and what are we showing at the end of this cycle? For us, it's going to be a month.
Yeah.
You know, so that's one attempt we're doing. And the other one was more about like, I was saying back to basics on even like retrospectives, make sure everybody's doing it at the end of every cycle. And the conversations are really getting into the whys and like, you know, we said we were going to do these 10 things in these last 2 weeks. Did we? And if not, why not? You know what I mean? Like, because if you work on an environment, I work in consulting too, you know, and I think if you work in an environment, that's different. Those tools are super useful because, you know, you have someone who is like, if you don't deliver on the things you promised, you get kicked out. Yeah, there's a much stronger incentive to really do it. Like in product facing, consumer facing companies, most of the deadlines are self-imposed.
Right. Right?
We want to ship this by this date. And I think that's what kind of made people relax in a bit to be like, it's fine. Nothing really burn if we don't do this. But the focus needs to be on like us as a team, are we good at doing what we do? You know what I mean? Like, and I think it's that pride that you're trying to develop about the work that people are doing to say like, when we say we're going to do this, we're able to execute. We're so good at this that we execute and we complete everything. And I think that's the techniques or practices you want to implement are all around trying to do.
And I think for me, that ties back into what you said earlier about, you didn't say specifically, but I kind of connected the dots. Like this enables the team to be predictable so that what they do ties to the business because they are predictable.
Applied.
In that when they say they're going to do something, we're pretty sure they're going to do something close to it, or we're going to know that they're not.
Yeah.
Right? We trust that this team really is going to practice continuous improvement.
Yeah.
So that proactively ties their work to the goals of the business because the business likes teams who do that. All right. So it's like a virtuous circle where, oh, this team, regardless of what we give them, we know we can rely on them. We can lean on them. And so we are going to give them things that tie to the, right? So it's like, it's self-serving in a future way as well, which is
pretty cool. Literally.
So a couple more curiosities. I was surprised to learn that this was a team that had not worked together before. And so I have a question to ask you, like, are there any characteristics about a team that would make them more or less likely to respond well? I had assumed that it was a team that knew how to work together. So no, that's not it. Is there anything that you can think of either that you've experienced or from other teams that you've worked on, like where you think, okay, if there was like maybe if the team was too junior, or maybe if there were low performing teams, do you think this would put this at risk in any way? Or like, what's your take around We don't know, you know, we're not, you know, you and I don't have all the scientific data of all the teams, but what's your insight as to, are there team characteristics that might help or hurt or no?
Yeah. I mean, I can see how, you know, when we talked about the things that why this happens, right? Like, or why we don't get these benefits all the time. And I was talking about some of the incentives, like I could have totally envision someone coming when we were trying to form this team being like, well, I'm going to have to stop on that one thing that I'm working on. And this is not like a collective effort because of the incentives in the company not being. So that is something that, you know, in some environments, if that is really strong, if people really operate with that model first and foremost, then I can see you running into issues trying to do an initiative like this. Yeah, I think like in general, just having people who understand this idea of like continuous improvement and why those processes exist and why we do things the way that we do, and you know, having that feeling, the empowerment that, you know, we can change the way we work, we should adapt it and make sure it's for the problems that we're solving, for the group that we have, that we can do this. And you know, sometimes a coach can be a great help in breaking maybe the mindset if people don't really see that. You know, some companies have agile coaches or hire agile coaches. Right. I think that's that is a great use of that. If you think that like the team is not like it's not able to break out of some of these constraints that sometimes, you know, are not really there, be able to see like, okay, we are in charge of this. Our goal is to ship on these things, to deliver these goals, and we have the power to do so. Then, yeah, I think that's probably what I would look at.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So unfortunately, we are out of time, but we have covered a lot. I appreciate you sharing the story. That's what this podcast is all about. You know, bringing the peer group to the technology leaders through firsthand experience. And this really was an excellent story that came with bright spots and lessons that we can all adapt. So it was great to see you. Thank you for being on the podcast. And thanks, everyone, for listening and watching.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. If you've enjoyed today's episode, remember to subscribe, give it 5 stars, and more importantly, share it with someone that you think will benefit from listening. And remember, as always, think about the 1 to 2 key takeaways that you can apply today to help you and your team achieve your goals. Until then, keep iterating.